This is Podcast on Infinite Earths, an unofficial DC Studios podcast where we discuss all things in the DC cinematic universe. I'm your host, Tyson, film student and beginner filmmaker.
And I'm your host, Porter, full-time editor and part-time filmmaker.
Welcome to our show. Today we are making our way through episode 4 of Harley Quinn. Porter, let's hear it.
Yeah, we got Brainiac's origin this episode, which it flew by. Like, I'm sure the length was the same as the other episodes, but it ended and I was like, wait, what?
Like, yeah, you turned to me and you were like, that's too short.
Yeah. So I obviously enjoyed it quite a bit. But yeah, did you enjoy it? What were your first thoughts?
Totally. I love that they kind of played it a little bit like a sitcom at first, giving us Brainiac's backstory. It felt unexpected that we got that much like description of the villain. He seemed super mysterious and whatnot, and kind of feel like you just know the guy at this point.
Right. Like, because the previous three episodes were both like, oh, what's Brainiac's deal?
Right.
I mean, we know that he miniaturizes worlds / cities, but other than that, and lo and behold, all of our answers were, or all of our questions were answered.
Genuinely. I mean, even Lena Luthor's involvement with him, we were like suspecting, you know, there was some stuff there, and like that was all confirmed.
Yeah. Yeah, it turns out she was too good to be true, huh?
Definitely.
But yeah, this episode was smart because I understand that he is a computer and a robot, but I feel like it completely like humanized Brainiac as a character. Like, I sympathize with his motivations. I obviously don't agree with them, but I can totally see where he's coming from. I think the whole bit with his family and he leaves them to go out for cigarettes, which is so good. Some of those, man, they're just so clever. Like,
you could tell with a lot of those lines and puns, the writers are just having fun with that one.
Totally. Like, very different from what they're probably used to writing, and they just let loose.
It's enjoyable. I can kind of flexing their verbal skills.
Totally.
But you make a good point that like it's one of those great villain backstories where you see where they're coming from, right? It doesn't not make sense. And you don't have to like justify their actions or, you know, care for them now that they're kind of on like a warpath or evil. It's understandable how they got where they were, right? Like, you can almost see, you know, a part of yourself inside of that. Like, okay, I would probably do that too if my family was taken from me in that way.
Right, exactly. And man, Coco was like my favorite character. And then for him to be dead, like, that was so sad. That was actually
really tragic.
Yeah.
I'm going to be real. It didn't click for me at first that so much time had passed that Coco just passed away and that was his pile of bones. I thought for some reason when he brought Harley in, like her beam like vaporized him or something like that. So I was like, is he going to like lose his mind right here? But then he just like turned to Coco and then turned back like nonchalant. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I was like, oh man, he's like imagining him. Like, that's just so sad.
Yeah, that was rough. You were a big fan of Coco throughout that episode. Yeah, and from like the first glimpse of Coco.
Yeah, I like monkeys. But yeah, it was cool how we got a bit of a pickup on that ending of episode 3. Dude's able to like straight up brain wipe people.
Yeah.
I definitely think in the next episode they'll probably realize something is up. But it was a cool idea to like give us all this backstory, introduce the main villain, introduce the Luther girl as like part of it, but then still be able to take it back a notch so that they can still kind of drip feed that information to the characters over the season, right? Like, they can almost do that thing where they have the bad guy reveal himself and everything, but you can still have that slow build up over the course of the entire season. And it's not like they jumped the gun.
Totally. I mean, it's kind of brilliance on their part, giving like the audience the reveal. So we're not like speculating too much. We kind of get what's happening, but there's still an amount of mystery there of like where this is going or how these characters are going to be involved now that they're like once again, to an extent, completely unaware of his existence.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense why it's just Metropolis, because his thing, oh, he was flying around, was like, can't save the whole planet, but I'll take the most closest to perfect city in that planet and get it to perfection and then scoop it up, right? And makes sense why Harley and Ivy would be foiling his plans. It sounds like it's more Harley than Ivy. Yeah, I mean, motivations make sense. It'll be fun to see why Luther wants to keep Harley even if she makes it imperfect. I don't really know what's going on there.
I'm curious what Luther's angle is in all of this, because clearly she's working with Brainiac and she's more than fine letting Metropolis at one point just be taken away, but right. I'm curious what the benefit is for her in all this.
Yeah, okay, here's an idea. So when he first froze up the planet or the city on Krypton, the people turned to stone, right? And me and you were both like, oh, like usually the people are able to still, like, I say usually, but we know it as like they're able to hang out, live their life, but they're just kind of in this bubble.
Right.
I wonder if he's found a way to do that since the Krypton one, and Luther gets to just be like king of the bubble. I don't know. Oh. King of the city. I don't know.
But yeah, but that's like, that's kind of glory in her mind, is kind of just having this perfect little world that she gets to run.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. That's an idea though. But if they stayed as like stone people, then I'm not entirely sure.
It might have something to do with maybe having that Luther in her blood, right? And wanting to like avenge Lex to an extent and just take away this monument to Superman. That is Metropolis, right? His city. That would be like the ultimate humiliation, right? For Superman's city to be like taken away like that.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Especially when like they very clearly set up in the beginning of this show that he's not going to be there to defend it, right? He's going through his little Superman slump.
Yeah, totally. Oh, man. Yeah, that's a great point. I kind of forgot about the Superman component of that. But yeah, that's a good theory that maybe she's just doing it to shove it in Superman's face.
I thought it was funny and interesting that, or maybe it just made perfect sense when Brainiac was confronting Harley and just called her like the ultimate like destructive power.
Yeah.
Right? That like she just like is chaos. She's unbridled chaos, and that like his plan, right, was to just wipe her out because he couldn't foresee a future in which like she fit into a perfect plan, which feels right for the Harley that we've come to know. And I just found it funny that like she was like enraged by this.
Yeah, seriously. Like she was not having it. Totally in line with her character. It's fun because I feel like Harley's definitely like an embodiment of chaos.
Yeah.
And Brainiac is like on the complete other end of that spectrum of like being perfect order, you know. Makes sense that they would butt heads.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, that's kind of brilliant on their part for picking them to be like, you know, the opposing forces in this show, even though they're both technically villains. I mean,
yeah,
very, very different goals in life. I think it's especially kind of wild that they showed us the extent of Brainiac's power, that he can, like, essentially with a thought, like, completely clean slate, just wipe somebody out. Like, you just see, like, the eyes leave their head and, like, just, like, white, just gone. That's scary, dude. Like, that is actually, like, just crazy power.
Yeah, because I didn't even think about that. But, yeah, he was ready to just wipe her out, like, right then and there, just eliminate her and... He could have if Luther didn't pull up. That's, yeah, I wonder what the workaround there is. I wonder if there's like a device that can hinder his powers. Yeah, weird.
There's got to be something around that. Because right at this current point, there would be no fair fight in any universe, right? It's no. Like a baseball bat versus like the most incredible supercomputer ever conceived.
Yeah, I wonder how that's going to go down. I wonder if Superman will pull up by the end of the season and help out. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, but fun episode. Once again, just super intriguing. Hope to see some of our theories come to fruition.
Yeah.
But yeah, you were telling me there was some news around the Superman movie.
Yeah, so recently, the estate of one of the co-authors that created Superman way back in the day filed a lawsuit against Warner Brothers saying that they haven't been received fair compensation regarding any Superman projects past 2017, I believe. And people are saying it could be a possible hindrance on the international releases of the Superman film. The details are very crazy, right? And I know you looked at the same article kind of detailing the history, but back in the day, the two guys that created Superman, and this is just how it goes, right? People create characters for when they're comic book writers, and then they sell those rights to a publisher like Marvel or DC, and then now they own that copyright, but those authors will still like write for it and work on that character. That's just how it's the business, right?
Right.
I put that in place to tell you because like there was nothing especially shady done about this at the beginning, right?
It was just like unprecedented how much like their character took off. But you're right. Like that's typically how it is like you create somebody and then we hire you on to like build it out because you created it and
yeah,
there's a job in it for you. But when like your character starts making like crazy money,
gets a little muddled, right? But crazy thing is they sold the rights to Superman. I think it was like, what, $138 or something?
Yep.
Which is insane to me. But
I mean, hindsight is 2020, I suppose. Right? But like, I don't know. What's that, 1930s, 1940s?
Yeah, that's probably a good chunk of money.
Yeah.
I guess it obviously blew up. Superman's huge. And the authors sued when they tried to use Superboy, right? Which I guess they had some grounds to sue on. And they tried to also like retcon the whole Superman thing and be like, oh, we also want more compensation for Superman. The courts ruled in favor of the Superboy stuff, which they got like a lot of money for.
Yeah, I think they said in today's dollars it was close to $1.3 million.
Yeah, it was a good chunk of change. But the court ruled that like the Superman stuff was final, right? Like they did sell the rights. I want to say it was in the 90s when the authors passed away. Obviously not at the same time, but their estates, they did some deal with DC and Warner Brothers. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it was something like they'd get crap ton of money up front plus like $500,000 yearly.
Yeah,
like it was something crazy like that,
right? And then they get like mentions in the credits, like they got like a fantastic deal. Yeah, because they were still coming after, you know, Warner Brothers and being like, we still aren't being compensated. And exactly. The deal was like, okay, if you drop this for the rest of time, we will keep giving you money year after year, just leave it alone.
Yeah, and they signed and they agreed to it, right? And that was back in early 2000s and the 90s. And I think there's something about like 25 years after the author's death, the, I don't know if it's U.S. law or if it said Canadian law, but it said 25 years after the author's passing, the character, anything that they wrote goes back to the...
Oh, to the estate.
To the estate.
Whoa.
So that's kind of their grounds, right? Is because I think 2017 was like 25 years after that author's death.
Right.
And so granted, there hasn't been like a Superman movie, but there's been like the Snyder Cut of Justice League and animated stuff. And
right. Making money off Superman.
Exactly. And the new TV show. Like there's stuff, right? So their grounds are that the rights have come back to them after that 25-year period, and then they have not been compensated. So they're filing a lawsuit against Warner Brothers, and people are thinking it might affect the release of this new movie. But I personally don't think so, because I think any lawyer that, especially a big corporation like Warner Brothers could buy, would be able to look at those past agreement documents and be like, guys, like you said you would drop this. Like you said you would get off their backs. Of course, I am not a lawyer. I have not seen these documents that they agreed to back in the day. But it kind of sounds like it was set in stone in the 90s, early 2000s. I'm a bit surprised. I would not blame Warner Brothers if they did not see this coming.
Right. Well, I mean, and I think one thing that maybe wasn't just super savage was that, like, they tried this multiple times, like once in the 90s and then again in the early 2000s. And both times the agreement was like, okay, here's more money. You're going to drop it, right? And they're like, of course. Why wouldn't we?
Yeah.
And I think this is like the third time they're trying this, which, like, it seems like they may just never stop, right? Eventually you'll get like enough generations in that somebody's going to feel entitled to more.
Right.
Which, I don't know. It feels kind of trust fund, just kind of like not.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be different if the authors were alive and they were the ones doing this.
Right.
But they're not. Like, if... And granted, there's the question of like, well, how much money could they have made in their lifetimes, right? But I certainly think that $500,000 a year,
even for an estate, that is crazy money.
That's pretty dang good. Like, I'm pretty sure by like year 20, you would have made up the amount of money they could have made in when they were alive.
Right. Not to mention the big old settles that they get in the beginning and right, all these rights in the movies to just get like credits and things like that. It seems like a good deal, maybe to just like a lower middle class like me,
right?
But I don't know, I was mentioning to you, I'm almost on the side of like the big corporation in this one, because it doesn't feel like they're being screwed over, right? Like, there was a pretty clear deal, and though the article tried to remain impartial, right, it didn't pick a side per se, it seemed fairly clear cut that like Warner Bros is in the right on this. They've tried to like make it right.
Yeah, I feel like they've tried to make it right, and I'm with you. I mean, in this rare instance, I am on the side of the corporation, right? But yeah, it's a crazy bit of news happening. I really don't think it'll affect anything.
The way they were playing it out is right. It will maybe affect some foreign markets with different, you know, copyright laws and things like that. So they might just try a different rollout strategy, but in the US especially, and quite likely everywhere else, like eventually it won't be a big deal.
Oh, for sure. And I, like I said, they're big enough that they can hire lawyers, and there's a lot writing on this movie that they will get the lawyers.
Right.
And I feel like I said, I haven't seen the documents, but from what timeline I read, it feels like a good lawyer would be able to be like, throw it out. You know what I mean? But that is just, yeah, bizarre. If you want to hear a similar story, yeah, I mean, I guess sort of. At the time, it was on Hulu when it released, but it's called Batman and Bill. It's a documentary. Have you seen this?
I saw a trailer for it. It looked pretty solid.
Yeah, it's a good documentary. It's similar to this. It's just saying that, like, Batman's created by Bob Kane, but then apparently this guy named Bill Finger also helped create Batman, but was never credited, like, ever.
Oh, so he got nothing.
Ever. Like, whoa. Never, ever. And his estate fought and was, like, trying to get him to be at least... I can't remember how much, if there was money involved or how much, but at least, like, credit, right? And I think Batman v Superman is the first movie to have the credits say Batman created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger.
Wow.
So it's a fun bit of trivia. But
well, that's like, once again, that's one of those instances where you would want to root for the little guy, right? Where you're just like, exactly. Oh man, right? You know, the corporation and or his partner, right? Just kind of screwed him out of like this creative idea that he contributed to. I'll have to check that out. That sounds super cool.
But yeah, definitely this whole thing made me think of that. And I was like, oh yeah, something similar has happened before, definitely at different scales, but
I'm curious if all this lawsuit action will only just build more hype around the Superman movie. It definitely has brought some like more attention to it. I don't know, they say, you know, any press is good press, but
right,
yeah, I'm curious how James Gunn feels about this whole debacle, because this is, it's kind of an unexpected development in like this like very fast approaching release of like the first big live action DCU movie, right?
Yeah, I wonder if they'd be able to still release it in international markets when it comes out. Like, if there was, I wonder if there's some legal thing where it's like, you've known they were making this movie for like 6 years kind of thing. And I wonder if there's something to the point of like, you've delayed in filing the lawsuit, so like they can still, for a certain amount of months, like release it in foreign markets until this gets resolved. Like I said, my personal opinion is that it'll get resolved fairly, at least before the release of the movie.
I'm mostly curious if it'll be like resolved and like the judge will just be like, throw it out, this is dumb, you've tried this before,
right? Or if it'll be another settlement.
Which, I mean, this kind of just feels like the bratty child where like if you never say no, they're just gonna keep like walking all over you, right?
So yeah, it's like,
if they settle again, I feel like this just won't be the end of the estate war. Well,
yeah, see, that's the problem, right? Is like if they settle, there'll probably be something just like 20 years ago where they were like, this is it.
Right.
But if the previous one doesn't stand, then like what's the point of settling again? I don't know, man. It's so interesting. I'm going to be following this.
Yeah, so things to look forward to outside of just the Superman movie. It'll be the legal action involved in it.
Right. Well, this has been a podcast on Infinite Earths and Unofficial DC Studios podcast, where we bring episodes to you every Monday. I'm your host, Porter.
And I'm your host, Tyson.
We'll catch you next week.
See you later.